It's May 7th, 2012, approximately 10 a.m. We're in the Public Service Commission hearing room in the state capitol in Bismarck, North Dakota, for the administrative hearing in the matter of the complaint of North Central Electric Cooperative against Otter Tail Power Company, case number PU-11701. My name is Alan Holberg. I'm the designated procedural hearing officer in this matter, administrative law judge with the Office of Administrative Hearings. We'll take appearances at this time from counsel, and we'll start with the complainant, and then the respondent, and then the intervener, and then counsel for the commission. Ms. Hoffarth, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Deb Hoffarth with the Pringle and Harrison law firm on behalf of North Central Electric.
Thank you. Who's at the table with you, Ms. Hoffarth?
Yes, Don Egard is also with Pringle Harrison law firm, and Wayne Mardian is the manager of North Central Electric.
I'm sorry, Wayne?
Mardian, M-A-R-T-I-A-N.
Thank you. Mr. Sanderson, please.
Paul Sanderson, Zuger Crimson Smith, on behalf of Otter Tail. Co-counsel is Bruce Gerhardson on Otter Tail. Bruce will be handling the argument here today.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Brunko, am I pronouncing that right?
You are. My name is R.J. Brunko. I'm counsel to the intervener, the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians.
Thank you. And I should note that pursuant to a late request on Friday, I did issue an order granting admission pro hoc vici from Mr. Brunkow pursuant to Ms. Vignes Kolb's motion. And so he's authorized to practice before the commission. I should also note that on April 26th and May 1st, the tribe did petition to intervene in this matter. I issued an order first denying that, or declaring it void, I guess. And then pursuant to a second petition, I did grant the intervention in this matter. PSC, please.
Mark Grumman, on behalf of the Public Service Commission. To my right is Jerry Lean, Commission Advisor.
Thank you. And of course, to my left are members of the Public Service Commission, Commissioner Kevin Kramer, Commission Chairman Tony Clark, and Commissioner Brian Calk. And I'm going to give a brief summary. This little complicated matter, I'm going to give a brief summary and talk about the procedure today before I ask you for your opening comments, if that's
okay.
Okay, just how we got here. I should say our court reporter is Stephanie Smith, too.
So talk slowly today.
Yeah. Okay, on December 12th of 2011, North Central filed a complaint with the commission against Otter Tail. The commission did find the complaint to show a prima facie case. The complaint alleges violations of North Dakota Century Code sections 490301 through 490301.5. Otter Tail did file an answer, and also on January 17, 2012, on that same day, Otter Tail also filed a motion to dismiss with supporting brief. On February 2nd of this year, North Central filed a response brief. On February 13 of this year, Otter Tail filed a reply brief, and on February 14, North Central filed a response to the reply brief. We held a pre-hearing conference on April 23rd. As a result of that pre-hearing conference and the stipulations made in that pre-hearing conference based on the complaint and the answer and the briefs of the parties, it was determined that there are no facts in dispute and that only additional oral argument should be made in regard to this matter. After the pre-hearing conference, I issued a document entitled Pre-hearing conference summary and stipulations. It contained some stipulations of facts that were agreed upon at the pre-hearing conference. And then on May 4, North Central and Otter Tail filed an additional stipulation of facts for the record in this matter. And I did approve, as of today, that stipulation of facts. So in other words, there are no facts to be presented in this matter today, no additional evidence to be presented. What the commission has before it, at least as I understand it, is a motion to dismiss the complaint based on facts not in dispute, which is, in essence, summary disposition of this matter. And if the complaint is not dismissed, you still have essentially a motion for summary disposition of this matter based on facts not in dispute. So today, as I understand it, the parties will give oral argument, will set forth the basis for the complaint and the facts, and argue the results of filing that complaint, what the results ought to be in their opinion. It's likely that the parties will argue different interpretations of the facts based on their view of the law. It's my understanding, counsel, that the facts necessary for a decision in this matter are not found entirely in the stipulations, but are also to be gleaned from the complaint, the answers, and the affidavits filed with regard to the briefs. Would that be correct, Ms. Holforth?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Gerritsen?
That is not my understanding. In fact, I think actually that one of the stipulations on what are the undisputed facts involves, in fact, at least one affidavit where at least one of the assertions in the affidavit is not a stipulated fact, for example. So it's our belief that the stipulated facts are all of the facts before this commission for purposes of this disposition.
So the stipulations agreed upon at the pre-hearing conference and then the subsequent stipulation contain all the facts necessary? I thought there was some allegations in the complaint and then responding answers that form the basis for some of the facts in this matter.
If I may clarify, what I meant to say or what I was attempting to say is an example of an item, for example, argued in one or asserted in one of the affidavits is an item that the company at least doesn't agree with. We felt it was a conclusory statement and therefore we didn't want there some implication that we've agreed to that conclusory statement. That was, I think it was assertion number 10 in the affidavit of one of the cooperative manager, for example. So when we made our most recent agreement, the stipulation that I believe Your Honor signed just today, one of the assertions in that stipulation was that item number 10, for example, was not a stipulated fact. From that affidavit. I hope that clarifies with respect to what's asserted in the complaint and answer. Again, I guess I'd have to consider each of the assertions there, but I believe that the complete stipulated facts are those contained within those noted by the administrative law judge in the earlier order and then also those that the administrative law judge signed today.
In any event, there won't be any presentation by either North Central, correct, Ms. Holforth?
No presentation of it.
Or Otter Tail or the intervener today, correct?
That's correct. There's no intention for evidence.
And I'm sure that counsel in their oral arguments will set forth the facts and their view of the facts as they see them. The order for oral argument today, as I indicated earlier, will be North Central, followed by Otter Tail, followed by the intervener, and then we'll conclude with North Central because they have the burden of proof in regard to complaint. And I should say that following each presentation by the attorneys in regard to their oral argument, I will allow questions by the commissioners and commission staff of counsel. When they've made their presentation, I'll ask the commissioners and commission counsel if they have any questions in regard to the argument that has just been made. Anything else preliminarily before I ask the commissioners for their opening comments? Ms. Holforth?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Gerritsen?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Mr. Duncow?
Nothing, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Clark, please.
Just good morning and welcome. I've enjoyed the opportunity to read through some of the pre-filed information and look forward to a good hearing. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Kramer, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, everybody, and welcome. This morning, I too have found this case to be quite fascinating, frankly. I've read the Eighth Circuit order a few times, mostly in preparation for other presentations or speeches, and so it's kind of interesting now to read it in the context of an actual case before us. In terms of just direction, I don't think this will shock anybody. I mean, I have a couple of fundamental questions I would expect oral arguments will help clarify. One, of course, the fundamental question of jurisdiction over the tribe, as it's, I guess, described in some of the case. But then beyond that, of course, setting that question aside for a moment, or even assuming, while I'm not assuming, but for the purpose of my direction, that we do not have that jurisdiction. Then my question is, but what of our jurisdiction over an investor-owned utility such as Otter Tail Power? And if that, depending on how that question is answered, of course, then my question would be, and how will this, if it was allowed to continue, affect the rest of Otter Tail's North Dakota customers? So for me, that's as fundamental as it gets, and I look forward to hearing the arguments. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Koch, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's interesting. Listening to Kevin's comments, we don't talk about these cases, obviously, until we get to our work sessions, but his point's laying it out, the jurisdiction question, and then the follow-on of Otter Tail is an investor-owned utility, and depending how this all plays out, how it could affect in the future rate case, I'm very interested to see how that discussion might be brought up by you. And also, too, there's the area of relationships. This is we want to build relationships throughout the state, and that's I know that there's always the legal sides of things, but at the end of the day, we've got an investor-owned and a co-op that share the same space that need to work together. So I'm hopeful that we can get through this and keep those relationships intact.
Thank you, Commissioner Koch. Thank you, Commissioners. Ms. Hofarth, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Do you mind if I sit while I make my argument, or should I stand?
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you. As we know, this is a case about interference, and first of all, good morning to everyone. This is a case about interference and wasteful duplication of services by Otter Tail and its extension of its plants and facilities without a certificate of public convenience and necessity. North Central believes, and we think that you'll find based upon the law, that the Public Service Commission does have jurisdiction, and that the motion to dismiss by Otter Tail Power should be denied, and that judgment actually as a matter of law should be issued in favor of North Central. I'm going to kind of start back a little bit with the TIA, go into just what we think are kind of the critical facts, and talk about the jurisdictional issues as well. So if you have a question anytime, feel free to stop me, and I'll try to address it. But the North Dakota Public Service Commission has the authority and the jurisdiction to grant relief to North Central under the Territorial Integrity Act. The TIA requires that prior to commencing construction, a public-owned utility must apply for and be granted the public the PCNN, the public convenience and necessity in rural areas. And the TIA's intent is to minimize wasteful duplication of investment, facilities, and services. And that site goes back to the Cass County cases from 1980. So that's really what one of the bases for the TIA is. Now, Otter Tail contends that the TIA doesn't apply because the PC lacks jurisdiction. We don't believe that's true. In any event, the PAC does not take a narrow view under its jurisdiction under the TIA. I mean, the PSA takes a broad view of what its jurisdiction is given under the legislation. Now, a quick background before we get too much in the jurisdictional arguments, because in any jurisdictional argument, the facts are critical to the determination. North Central has been serving the Skydancer Casino since December 2nd of 1998. It currently has 7 different metered facilities on the Skydancer Casino.
Are you getting that?
I'll slow down. I am fast. So when the tribe began the expansion of the casino, there was an initial call to North Central requesting service, and that's in paragraph, I believe, 9 or 10 of Mr. Mardian's affidavit. And then later it requested Otter Tail to provide power, and in front of the commission is the resolution of the tribe for that. Now, North Central, or Otter Tail, did commence construction without the PCNN, and as they did that, they crossed Central Power Electric Cooperative's transmission line. Now, North Central gets its power from Central Power, so those lines that they crossed underneath would have been providing power to North Central. Not only did they cross that, they crossed North Central's distribution line. They also were in the North Dakota Highway 5 right-of-way and crossed the highway. So this motion dismissed is based upon tribal sovereignty, which, of course, we assert that Otter Tail does not have the standing to raise the tribe's sovereignty issues. In any event, even though the tribe has intervened, we don't believe that the tribe sovereignty will preclude jurisdiction in this case in any matter. The tribe intervened to assert its sovereign rights. because they want to, the reasoning to request power from OTP, Otter Tail Power, what we believe the tribe's intervention is relevant to is customer preference, which of course is one of the factors under the PCNN and the TIA. However, it's not a binding factor. It's not the number one factor for consideration by the commission. So we believe their participation is relevant to the extent that they're the customer that extended service. Although the tribe may want to receive power from Otter Tail Power, the Public Service Commission is the entity that has the regulatory authority to make that determination. I'm going to kind of walk back through the North Dakota cases that we think are relevant, and they're actually still good law. They've never been overruled by a court of jurisdiction that applies to the state of North Dakota. In 1984, the PSC actually heard a decision in a dispute, or issued a decision, which was appealed all the way to the North Dakota Supreme Court, between Otter Tail and Baker Electric regarding a school, a Bureau of Indian Affairs, a school on the Turtle Mountain Indian Reservation. And we asked in our May 1st brief that you take judicial notice of that proceedings. The North Dakota Supreme Court site is 354 Northwest 2nd, 701, which was issued in 1984. The PSC case number, it started in 1981, it's 10,312, is some of the PSC numbers that I've seen. So this case involved the jurisdiction of the Public Service Commission on the Turtle Mountain Indian Reservation, which is the same reservation that we're dealing with today. In that case, I'm going to call it the 1984 case just for simplicity purposes, the North Dakota Supreme Court found that Otter Tail had purchased the Bureau of Indian Affairs system in 1968. And at that time, Otter Tail agreed that it would follow the rules of the Public Service Commission and the state of North Dakota as part of the agreement with the BIA. And that's at page 703 of that 1984 case. The North Dakota Supreme Court also determined that the Public Service Commission had the jurisdiction to proceed to regulate the matter and that the exercise of the jurisdiction did not infringe upon the rights of tribal self-government. And that's at page 705 of that brief as well, or of that opinion as well. The court indicated that the PSC's action in regulating the utility was not or was consistent with the federal purpose of providing power to the school. And in that particular case, the court noted that Otter Tail had conceded that Indian jurisdiction was not at issue in that case, which is not exactly on point with this case because apparently that's a different issue that we have in this case. That decision was not appealed beyond the North Dakota Supreme Court. It is still good law in the state of North Dakota. It's involving the same reservation and at least one of the same parties. Surely if the PSC had jurisdiction over the BIA's right, or the Bureau of Indian Affairs' right to choose a power supplier, it would have the same jurisdiction in this case over a tribal, the tribe, the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians. Based on the 1984 case, we believe the PSC does have jurisdiction. In 1990, the PSC again visited the issue regarding jurisdiction on Indian Reservation. This time it was on the Spirit Lake Reservation, or at that time it was the Fort Totten Reservation. And that's application of Otter Tail Power Company. That's 451 Northwest 2nd 95. That's the 1990 case. I'm going to call it the 1990 case just for simplicity reasons. That was a dispute over a new manufacturing plant on the Spirit Lake Reservation. The manufacturing plant had requested service from Baker Electric, but later on the tribe requested power from Otter Tail. And so just like in this case, Otter Tail tried to assert the self-government interests of the tribe, and it was not allowed to do so because it lacked standing. But beyond the standing issue, even after determining this, that they did not have standing, the court went on to discuss the jurisdiction over the Public Service Commission over Otter Tail in the context of the Spirit Lake Tribe's treaty and its inherent sovereignty. The court noted that the state law allocating electric services between competing utilities did not amount to regulating the use or development of the tribal property. They also determined that the tribe had failed to assert jurisdiction over electric utilities, which allowed substantial investments within the reservation which could not be recovered if services are duplicated. And what's kind of important about that, that goes back to duplication of services, interference, those sorts of claims. And that's what we have here. Interestingly enough, the federal court did go on and say that the tribes cannot regulate the utilities utility codes, and that's the Devil's Lake Sioux Tribe case versus the Public Service Commission, 896 Fed Sup 955, and that was issued in 1995. So that they determined that the tribe did not have the inherent sovereignty to regulate utilities. In the 1990 case, the North Dakota Supreme Court viewed the tribe's request for power from Otter Tail as the tribe reaching outside the reservation to regulate a public utility rather than a reaching in by a non-Indian entity. And what that gets to is when we're dealing with the sovereignty of tribes, there's reluctance for courts in some extents to allow a non-Indian to come onto the reservation and regulate what the tribe's doing with their land or their businesses or their internal relations, which I'll talk about a little bit more in detail in a little bit. But that's what we have going on here. Here the tribe is trying to reach outside the reservation boundaries to regulate utilities. Now these lines run, the 1990 case talks about the fact that these the electrical supply lines run in and out of the reservation. They don't start there, they don't end there. And so there has to be a way to get that power supply to there. And under North Dakota law, there has to be a way to regulate the utilities, which is what the TIA does. The PSC has extensive authority to regulate the utilities. The tribe's preference for Otter Tail over North Central does not override the commission's jurisdiction. The regulation of the utilities does not, in fact, regulate the use or development of the tribal land. Because, as is noted in the record, North Central is already providing power to the casino and seven different metered facilities. So in that case, you already have someone who's providing power to the facility. And there's kind of a long-range question as to what happens, and I'm skipping ahead of myself here, but while I have it in my mind, I'm just going to spit it out. You know, you can have these two utilities servicing one piece of property, and you have one casino that, or the casino... North Central has expended a lot of, I guess it's not a fact and evidence, but they have their plant and facilities to the casino campus already. And that's a wasteful duplication to have Otter Tail come in, and then what do you do with those facilities of North Central that's already there? In 1990, in the 1990 case, the North Dakota Supreme Court did determine the PSC had jurisdiction over Otter Tail's actions. Now, some important facts to the court in that case was that the electrical supply systems, of course, weren't confined to the reservation, and that can impact non-reservation customers or other residents of the state of North Dakota. In addition to, they discussed authority of the tribe and found the tribe didn't derive their powers to regulate under either the Montana exceptions. Now, the Montana exceptions deal with U.S. Supreme Court decisions about authorities of tribes over non-Indians. And so infringement, North Dakota Supreme Court found that infringement of the tribes to make their own laws and be ruled by them is difficult to comprehend because, as the PSC found, the tribe has not developed a regimen for regulating electric suppliers. And even assuming, and the North Dakota Supreme Court even assumed that that the tribal resolution was there, and that even assuming there could be some jurisdiction, it said after the fact, it unilaterally directed Otter Tail to be the supplier, that there would be a minimal burden on tribal self-government if the PSC went ahead with its orders. The North Dakota Supreme Court concluded the state's interest in regulating the public utility outweighed the minimal burden on tribal self-government. Now, if you look at that Eighth Circuit case, which is Baker Electric versus Chaskey, 28 Fed 3rd 1466, which is the 1994 Eighth Circuit case, the Eighth Circuit felt that the decision that was issued by the North Dakota Supreme Court was supported by its analysis that Otter Tail didn't have standing to assert the tribe's sovereignty or on its Montana analysis. The Eighth Circuit said North Dakota Supreme Court had analyzed those issues. But the 1990 case and the 1984 state cases are still good law. Neither appealed to a higher authority. Otter Tail does argue they have been overruled, but that's not the case. The District of North Dakota cannot overrule Supreme Court decisions on its own law. So we believe, North Central believes the Public Service Commission should follow the precedents of the state. Furthermore, we believe that the gaming compact, which is part of the stipulated facts, those weren't involved in the other cases. The gaming compact recognizes the retention of state jurisdiction in paragraph 17.2. It also discusses that that neither state or the tribes are going to expand their civil jurisdiction. So what we would argue that means is the tribe can't expand its jurisdiction on its gaming activities onto regulating things within the state of North Dakota. Additionally, those federal court cases had additional evidence presented by the tribe that allowed the court to do additional fact-finding regarding jurisdictional. They had the treaty rights. They had alleged damages by the tribe. We don't have any of that here in this case. So even with the tribe's intervention, the commission has jurisdiction, and it's the tribe who has the burden to bear that there is some sort of threat to its political integrity by the PSC's actions. It's a long established, in 1978, Oliphant versus Suquamish Indian Tribes is one of the first cases regarding tribal jurisdiction. It's a long precedent that tribes have diminished sovereignty over non-Indians.
What's the site on that one?
435 U.S. 201, and that's a 1978 U.S. Supreme Court decision. The court cases that have dealt with this sort of issue that we have in this case, whether they be from the PSC in the state of North Dakota, and even in the federal court cases, they talk about the Montana analysis. The North Dakota Supreme Court has already determined that tribes do not have the authority under the Montana factors to regulate utilities, and that's that 1984 case. I'm going to briefly touch on a Montana analysis for the court's review. The Montana versus United States, which is 450 U.S., and I'm citing page 565 and 566, it says, in absence of congressional direction, Indian tribes lack civil authority over non-members unless there's a consensual relationship between non-members of the tribe or members of the tribe and non-Indian activity which affects an Indian tribe's political integrity, economic security, health, or welfare. So that's really when we talk about the Montana test, that's what that involves. And so exercise of power, tribal power, beyond what is necessary to protect tribal self-government or control internal relations is inconsistent with what is called the dependent status of Indian tribes, and there must be express congressional authority for that to occur. The first exception deals with consent, and there's the type of cases that the Montana court listed would be involved would be on-reservation sales transaction, taxes on non-member-owned livestock within the boundaries of the reservation, taxes on businesses conducted by non-members, and taxes on cigarette sales. This is not the same type of activity. The concept of supplier and consumer, if we put it that way, the tribe's the consumer and the utility would be the supplier. That's not the kind that it is thought of under the Montana exceptions. And that the 1990 case, that page 104, they discuss that first example. The other things that we think are important under the Montana analysis, and this gets into Strait versus A1 Contractors, which is 520 U.S. 438. That's a 1997 U.S. Supreme Court decision. There's a whole line of Montana cases. This would be the next one. That involved a car accident on a state highway near Newtown on the Fort Berthold Indian Reservation. And what the Strait case determined was that when you have a state highway, the tribe has no regulatory authority over the highway. So important facts from North Central's perspective are is that Otter Tail crossed Highway 5. Part of the record is Central Power's easement for within the North Dakota Department of Transportation's plat, that's part of the record. North Central's easements is part of the stipulations that we entered to. And all of those were crossed when Otter Tail expanded its plants and facilities. All of these entities involve the rights of non-Indians, their property rights. And Strait says that there's no authority over non-Indian conduct on state highways because when the highways, those sorts of transactions are made, the tribe becomes a stranger to the property because it didn't retain its gatekeeping right. So they can't assert the right to exclude and occupy. In this case, since they utilized those, the highway right-of-way, Central Powers crossing their rights and crossing North Central's easements, We believe that the tribe's gatekeeping rights and correspondingly they lost their jurisdiction and sovereignty over those particular parcels of land. The tribe doesn't have the authority to regulate the state right of way, and without the utilization of that state right of way and without crossing both North Central's and Central Power's electric service lines, there'd be no way for Otter Tail to reach the casino. So we believe under these sort of circumstances, the Public Service Commission has the jurisdiction to regulate. The second exception is concerned with effects on the tribe's political integrity, economic security, health and welfare of the tribe. The Plains Commerce case, which is 554 U.S., and I'm citing page 328, that case says that in order to be regulated by the tribe, conduct must imperil the tribe. And so in this exception, the second Montana exception is to be narrowly construed. Tribal sovereignty is really narrow in those cases. So under that exception, tribes are allowed to have inherent power to punish tribal offenders, determine tribal membership, regulate domestic relations, and prescribe rules of inheritance for its members. But it's always tied to the tribe's right to self-government and controlling internal relations. Where there is no federal grant of power providing tribal governments over non-members, it is evident that tribal courts lack adjudicatory authority over disputes regarding conduct. That's the Strait case, footnote 14. So in this case, there is no evidence that the regulation of the electric service provider will actually imperil or have any sort of effect on the internal workings of the tribe or the health and welfare of any tribal member, that it's going to affect self-government or somehow affect the economic development opportunities of the tribe. On a side note as well, the state and tribe can have concurrent jurisdiction over a matter. That site is New Mexico versus Mescalero, M-E-S-C-A-L-E-R. 462 U.S. 324. That's a 1983 case. A state's regulatory interest can be substantial if the state can point to off-reservation effects that necessitate the state's interventions. There's no evidence to support that the regulation of Otter Tail power under the TIA causes any harm to the tribe. The PSC has an interest in off-reservation effects of the provision of electrical service that warrants actions by the state agency, which gets to the question about what's the future rate case going to be. We don't have any evidence on that particular issue, but that just points to the fact that the PSC would have jurisdiction because of the off-reservation conduct or issues that will arise as a result of this issue. So for those reasons, we think the motion to dismiss must be denied. We believe that Otter Tail is subject to the PSC's jurisdiction, no matter where it's located. And under all the analysis of the law, we believe that even with the tribe's request for service from Otter Tail power and recognize that the tribe does have some inherent sovereignty, in this case that doesn't overrule the commission's authority because of the state's interests. Since the PSC has jurisdiction, we believe Otter Tail should be restrained from constructing and extending its line without the PCNN. And as a matter of law, we believe North Central will prevail on the merits. We believe admissions, Otter Tail has admitted all the elements of the case. It's constructed an extension of its public utility plant and system to the Skydancer Casino without first obtaining a PCNN. It crossed the lines of North Central and Central Power Electric to do so. It crossed the state highway without doing so. And most importantly, I think we can't let this fact get lost in all of this, is that North Central is already providing service to the casino and has done so since 1988 with now up to seven metered facilities. And this is the definition of interference and can't be allowed by the PSC. If this type of action is allowed, after every tribal election, there would be lobbying to take loads from every tribal-owned entity. And so that's going to lead to a checkerboard event. There's not going to be orderly development. You're going to have all kinds of duplication of services, wasted investment. Even the Eighth Circuit case that was issued in 1994, 28 Fed 3rd, 1466, indicated that the Eighth Circuit was concerned about that case in wasted investment. So it's not just the North Dakota courts that are worried about wasted investment. The federal courts are worried about wasted investment again. Since Otter Tail expanded its facilities without a PCNN and it's duplicating and interfering with North Central's current service to the casino, we believe the facilities must be removed. This is an egregious case of interference and can't be allowed under North Dakota law, and they should be required to move their facilities. We don't believe that there's any harm to the tribe, as North Central is already providing power to the casino. Does anyone have any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Hofforth. I think we'll go with Mr. Grumman first if he has any questions.
I have no questions, Your Honor.
Thank you. Commissioner Clark.
Maybe just a couple. Thanks for your argument. And from a public policy standpoint, I understand your concern, and I may have some questions for Mr. Gerhardsen when the time comes with regard to what it mean and might mean in the future for Otter Tail if they were to serve the load. But I'd like for me, if you could, to describe a bit more, perhaps put a finer point on why you believe the 95 case, the Devil's Lake versus North Dakota PSC case, isn't the most relevant case on why that isn't the one that is most closely identified with this particular case, is most closely on point, and shouldn't hold precedent.
Sure. In the 1995 case, in that case, first of all, we're dealing with a different tribe. We're dealing, that case dealt with the Fort Totten tribe, or the Spirit Lake Reservation, as it, I believe it's now known as.
Why would that distinction make a?
Well, and when you're looking at, in that case, they looked at treaties and all sorts of things that we don't actually have in front of us. And with any tribe, without having reviewed the Spirit Lakes Treaty in comparison to the Tremont Band of Chippewas treaties with the United States, I mean, there could be differences in those particular documents. The court also looked at, in that case, the reservation location, the size, the percentage of fee land, and census information. We also don't have that information here. Regardless of that, the court also concluded that the tribe's regulations are not enforceable. And what's different here as well is we're dealing with sovereign immunity issues. We have the gaming compact, which says that the North Dakota is going to retain its jurisdiction. We would argue, and perhaps that the tribe would disagree, that the gaming compact would apply to any expansion of the casino. And so when you have the jurisdiction of that the state is allowing to keep its regulatory information, you know, its regulatory authority right in the gaming compact, we think that's significant. Also significant is since 1995 there has been other changes in Indian law. The Plains Commerce case is a more recent case. That case went on to talk about that now the Montana case is probably a little more narrow than maybe perhaps it was at the time. They talk about there actually has to be in peril to the tribal entity, and we don't believe that has been shown in this particular case. And as with every case, the facts of each case are important, and I don't know, it doesn't seem to me that the Devil's Lake Sioux Tribe case versus the PSC, in that particular case, I don't believe that Baker Electric was already, or the utility, or the rural electric was already serving that tribe at the time that all of this was occurring. I think Otter Tail served it from the start. I just wanted to look real quick here. In that particular case, the Otter Tail, Baker and Otter Tail, Otter Tail took the, and I'm just reading on page 957, Otter Tail took a customer away from Baker by virtue of a tribal resolution. I know the PSC ultimately determined that Baker should, here had decided that Baker would apply, but I think in that particular case, I'm not sure that there was service, and I don't remember off the top of my head, so I'll let the case be the better distinction of that. I don't think Baker was serving that particular facility. And further, if you look at the Eighth Circuit decision, which followed that down the line.
Which one is that?
That would be the 1994 case, which would be Baker Electric versus Chasky, 28 Fed 3rd, 1466. The court was concerned about wasted investment at that point because Otter Tail had had investments into the facility for that time, and Baker would have had to extend its line in order to serve. So in that particular case, if you kind of just try to follow along with what's in the district court and what's in here, Baker would have had to extend its lines. There would have been some, it seems to me in the cases that there's inferences that there would have been downtime of some sort between the changeover in the electrical services providers, which leads me to believe that Baker never served this load from the start that Otter Tail always had, even though that Baker, for whatever reason, even though Baker was ultimate at the PSC level, I think that's significant, that even the 8th Circuit's concerned about the duplication of services. So that's why I think it's different. And particularly since 1995, there has been a narrowing of the jurisdiction by the U.S. Supreme Court. And what I think what's really important in the district court case as well in 1995 is that the district court did say the tribes do not have inherent sovereignty to regulate utilities.
This might be thinking ahead a bit much, but mm-hmm. I'm curious. If I mean, let's say that ultimately it comes to bear that Otter Tail is allowed to serve the casino. Is a potential course of action for the cooperative in that case some sort of takings action where you have stranded investment, money has been put into service a particular location, and now for whatever reason the regulatory regime has changed so that someone else is serving that? Is that the remedy in a case like this?
You know, it's hard to say what the remedy would be. I mean, certainly there's stranding investment. I mean, it gets to the question. I mean, there are provisions under the North Dakota law about how to deal with if one utility is going to serve and how they buy out the other. But if you find that this doesn't, you don't have jurisdiction here, you certainly wouldn't have jurisdiction there. So it would be a takings case. There could be a breach or, you know, interference with contract sort of action. There's a multitude, I think. Those are just two that pop out of my head, but those are very significant. And how do you, and what court would that be sued in? Would that be state court? Would that be federal court? I mean, I think there'd have to be a significant amount of research for that to be done. And how that gets to rates by Otter Tail for having to litigate over it, I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kramer, please.
I think I'm down to one now. In I think it was the first case, in the 84 Supreme Court case, you made a statement that something to the effect that if a jurisdiction didn't extend to the, or if the BIA, you made a comparison between the BIA and the tribe.
Correct.
Is the BIA sovereign just like the tribe, and therefore they're the same, or is the tribe BIA an extension of the tribe? Or explain that argument a little bit.
I will. What the Bureau of Indian Affairs is they're actually an entity of the federal government. Okay, so they would be cloaked with the same sort of sovereign immunity issues as the United States would be. And in a similar way, the tribe has sovereign immunity in certain issues, in certain circumstances, and we agree that's true, but we believe that the sovereign immunity of the tribe is less than what the United States of America's sovereign immunity is. So the Bureau of Indian Affairs has some entities within the Turnamount Indian Reservation, okay, and then the tribe has its own tribal trust, you know, tribal land as well. And so, but there, I'm just using it as analysis, you know, the BIA would be cloaked with federal sovereign immunity, and the tribe, of course, has its own, which is different, of course, but similar.
Okay.
Does that help?
Well, yeah, I think it does, actually. I don't think it is the same. I mean, it's similar, but
it's similar.
And we're not talking about immunity. We're talking about governing.
Right.
So, anyway, but thank you for the clarification. I think the rest has been answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Call, please.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments, Deborah. Just a couple questions. When exactly did North Central find out that Otter Tail was moving into their area, per se? Was it the December filing, or was it long before that?
Thank you. That's a good question. It was shortly before that. If you look at Mr. Mardian's affidavit, which was attached to our complaint, It would have been, if paragraph 6, and of course this was one of our stipulations, is in late November he received a call from Otter Tail individuals, and their names are listed there, Mark Helland, Scott Saget, and Jeff Lemon, regarding a request for electric service to the new building on the Skydancer campus.
And when was the request? When did North Central first talk to the tribes about potentially serving?
That North Central, on paragraph 5 of Mr. Martin's affidavit, on November 28th, North Central was requested to provide 600-amp electric service to construction trailers. And what I believe that was, I don't believe that was ever in writing. I think that was just a telephone call request.
There wasn't. It would seem like there would have been a lot of discussion before November going back and forth between Otter Tail and North Central that wouldn't be here today. I'm just curious if that was really the first time.
The first time. Okay. As we set out in Mr. Martin's affidavit. And it was on December 1st that they got the request locate.
One call locate.
Yeah. The call to locate was on December 7th of 2011. Sure. And then shortly thereafter is when we filed our complaint.
The your discussion about Highway 5, I think I know the answer. I want to make sure that tribal land is on both sides of Highway 5 there, isn't it?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. But to take what was your point you're trying to make exactly again about the Highway 5 discussion? Because
yes.
I was tracking most of it, but I want to make sure I understand exactly what your point was there.
Yes, what my point is with that, the Strait versus A1 Contractors case, what that case stands for is that when the tribe allows state highways to be built, when that occurs, the tribe lost its right to regulate non-Indian conduct on that land. And so when State Highway 5 was built, and one of the exhibits is the plats and the actual NDD, the North Dakota Department of Transportation, easements for that. What happens when the tribe loses regulatory authority over what occurs within that right-of-way, which is owned by the state of North Dakota? And so one of the bases we think for having jurisdiction that the commission would have is because they cross that, the North Dakota Public Service Commission has jurisdiction, or the state of North Dakota. Let's say a car accident happened on that particular stretch of highway. Tribal courts would not have jurisdiction over that personal injury action. And in the same way, we believe that the commission has jurisdiction because of the involvement of that state highway.
So central power line would have been north of the existing Otter Tail lines, and so Otter Tail would have crossed over central power's lines in that right-of-way.
Correct, and it crossed the state highway. It went over the state highway, is my recollection, as their lines ran around the south side of the highway. They crossed the state highway over which the tribe would not have regulatory authority to get to the casino property.
Okay, and then the last question, I guess, for now is, North Central has been serving this area since 1998, you said?
Correct.
Has there been any... I'm sure there's always been questions about reliability here and there, but mm-hmm. has there been any significant questions of reliability that North Central has not provided the power to the tribal areas that they've requested and discussion about that?
And, of course, this is a part of the evidence, but since you asked, I will relay one. There's been one instance that I could think of that there was there had been some brownouts that had occurred at the casino, and I don't remember exactly the time frame of that. Do you remember?
This is last summer.
Last summer. And what it came, and sometime then this spring, this winter, there happened to be a problem at the casino. And when they got to, North Central was there and the casino personnel, Skydancer casino personnel were there, what was determined is there was a problem with the internal electric system, the electrical of the own of the casino that was causing the problem. That was not a problem with North Central's lines at all. And not to mention the investment that Central Power has made in that area with their new transmission lines, which provides more reliable power to North Central. But even without that investment, there was no reliability problems to our knowledge.
Okay. I believe that was it.
Thank you, Commissioner. Anything further?
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hoffarth. Mr. Gerritsen, please.
Okay, I think I have it. Sorry, I had a little trouble with the microphone.
It's regulatory lag.
It's regulatory lag. Thank you, Your Honor and Commissioners. I'm going to have Mr. Siggety put up an exhibit. I guess how I'll start is just to say that in the cases I've been
Just for illustrative purposes so we can see it better, Craig.
It's not evidence. It's a statement of the law. It's an excerpt from the 1995 case that was referenced in Ms. Hoffarth's presentation. And, you know, in the cases I've argued to this commission, I don't think we've ever had such a clear direction on a legal issue from prior case law as we do in this case. That's the 1995 district court ruling in the Devil's Lake Tribe versus North Dakota Public Service Commission. I'll get to the actual contents of that ruling in a moment, but in that case, the U.S. Federal District Court for the District of North Dakota considered whether the Devil's Lake Tribe had exclusive jurisdiction to all electric service locations on the reservation, or if not, whether the tribe had exclusive jurisdiction to some smaller subset of service locations. The 1995 court, the federal district court, determined that the tribe did not have jurisdiction to all service locations on the reservation, but the court's ruling was patently clear on a subset of locations over which the tribe did have exclusive jurisdiction. And the ruling was as follows. I'll read it for the record. The court concludes that Otter Tail is entitled to summary judgment on the issues between it and the North Dakota Public Service Commission to the effect that the tribe may by resolution or contract determine who is to supply electric service to tribal-owned businesses located upon Indian-owned or trust lands without regards to the rate structure or other regulations of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. The ruling goes on to issue a restraint against the Public Service Commission from sanctions against Otter Tail or any future competitor for providing that service. It goes on also to reference the extent to which the North Dakota Commission's powers are not limited, and I'll address those in a moment. In this case before you, there is absolutely no dispute on the following jurisdictional facts. The Skydancer Casino is a tribally owned business. The casino is on tribal trust land. And the tribe has by resolution determined that Otter Tail will supply electric service to the casino. Now, often when we bring case precedents to use in our arguments, they involve rulings from distant places, or if they're from here, usually the distant past. They might involve other states or other state agencies. They almost always involve different parties and usually different issues. And in the oral arguments I've been involved in, I and my opposing counsel attempt to argue that these old, distant, and remote cases are somehow analogous to or distinct from the case that's before you. And we do that to try and persuade you with those prior cases that you should rule similarly or differently from the case that you have to resolve. In this instance, we have something very different. We have a specific directive for this commission and on how it is to handle the exact issue in controversy. It's not a resolution from another jurisdiction or involving another agency. In the case directive we have, the commission was actually a party to the litigation. And like I said, the court's ruling gave the commission specific direction on what it was to do in cases like this one. And I don't need to tell you, but those proceedings that resulted in this 1995 decision had the benefit of an extremely voluminous record, accumulated in countless proceedings over something like 7 years. It involved proceedings in front of this commission, it involved proceedings in state court, and it involved proceedings in federal court. I have to say, I don't remember ever myself litigating anything for as long as these proceedings lasted. Some of the people in this room, I believe, may have actually lived those proceedings, and the rest of us have spent days, if not weeks, trying to familiarize ourselves with the lengthy narrative of those proceedings. And we can all agree, it is a circuitous and complex narrative, oftentimes confusing. And that's mostly because the different outcomes in the different forums that the parties were litigating. But despite these complexities in the narrative leading up to the conclusion of these proceedings, like I said earlier, I don't recall ever when the directive from a prior case was more clearly stated or more clearly applicable to this commission and these parties, and I don't recall when the resolution was more clearly applicable to the very issue the commission was being asked to resolve than this 1995 resolution. Now, I want to reiterate, in this case, there is absolutely no dispute on the following jurisdictional facts. They are stipulated. The Skydancer Casino is a tribally owned business. The casino is on tribal trust land. And the tribe has, by resolution, determined that Otter Tail will supply electric service to the casino. The question before you today is whether the relief requested in North Central's complaint is something within this commission's jurisdiction. So let's look at what relief is requested. The complaint requests a restraining order forbidding Otter Tail from serving the Skydancer Casino. Obviously, if such a restraining order were issued, it would be in direct contradiction to the tribe's determination that Otter Tail should be the electric supplier. And maybe more importantly, certainly as importantly, is it would be in direct contradiction of the very clear ruling in this 1995 case. And any way they want to spin it, North Central is requesting this commission to make a ruling that the tribe is not by resolution, that the tribe may not by resolution or contract determine who is to supply electric service to the tribally owned business on tribal trust land. Now, there's an argument that Ms. Hoffarth makes in several ways that maybe the commission doesn't need to affect the tribe's determination of who should serve this location, but rather can issue an order that would restrain Otter Tail somehow from extending its service lines to provide that service. Well, again, this is absolutely not consistent with the 1995 case and what happened with the two service locations that were in controversy in those cases. In that case, Otter Tail extended service to tribally owned manufacturing plant and a Head Start office. And there is absolutely no indication in the court proceedings that the tribe had jurisdiction only to determine the provider, but the Public Service Commission had jurisdiction over the extensions or their construction. And certainly the commission did not try to take any actions that would have inhibited the construction or operation of those facilities or in any other way assumed control over those facilities after the 1995 case was issued. This argument that the commission can retain a concurrent jurisdiction is not consistent with the cases that led up to the 1995 determination. In 1993, the same district court issued a ruling on the temporary restraining order that was currently restraining the commission from acting against Otter Tail in contravention of the tribe's authority. And that decision was found in error. And in that decision, Judge Conmee mused about the possibility of a concurrent jurisdiction. And the judge removed the restraining order against the commission and at the same time affirmed that the tribe had authority, essentially creating a concurrent jurisdiction. The Eighth Circuit in 1994, the very determination made by the Eighth Circuit on appeal, was that that was in error and that that was not a permissible result from this district court. And so the matter was remanded back down, resulting in the 1995 determination. And the 1995 determination is very clear that the commission does not retain a concurrent jurisdiction. It says, without regards to the rate structure or other regulations of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. Now, before I leave this ruling, I do want to address the last statement so as not to leave you with any confusion about what is retained with this commission. You may recall that in that decision, the court was also addressing the question of whether the tribe had authority over the entirety of the reservation, not just this limited subset of locations. And the court determined that in that case, the tribe didn't have that plenary authority over all service locations within the reservation. And so what the power that was not limited was to accept to such service tribally owned businesses on tribal trust land. North Central's argument would require you to stretch an interpretation of concurrent jurisdiction any way it might be phrased in a way that it would deprive the tribe of the very clearly stated authority coming out of the 1995 case. And that interpretation flies smack into the face of this interpretation and the directive that the tribe has authority and that the commission may not infringe on the tribe's authority in these situations. Effectively, their arguments would suggest that despite this clear directive, that somehow this commission could island these parcels and effectively embargo the tribe, embargo electric service to the locations, and thereby impose its own will on the tribe, despite the fact that the federal court clearly identified that it's the tribe's will and the tribe's determination as to who should provide electric service. And these interpretations are simply not consistent with common sense. One cannot read this absolutely clear ruling from the 1995 case that not only gave clear and singular authority to the tribe, but also restrained the commission from sanctioning the provider attempting to serve as permitting such an end-around approach to disenfranchising the tribe of its clearly and precisely articulated authority. Now, I want to address some of the questions that you asked of us. Well, maybe I should address the 1990 North Dakota Supreme Court case and maybe before that the 1984 case. Well, the 1984 North Dakota Supreme Court case involves the BIA, which is a federal agency. There are such distinguishing facts. I think it's articulated in our written presentation. Really are not analogous in any way to the present situation. There's no argument by any party, to my recollection, in that case that tribal sovereignty is even at issue. Ms. Hoffarth raised sovereign immunity. That is a separate and distinct issue. It doesn't apply in that case either. So I just don't see the 1984 case as having any applicability to the current situation. The 1990 case is the dispute that resulted in the 1995 federal court determination. And again, I told you, it was a circuitous and lengthy piece of litigation. But nevertheless, no party argued following the 1995 ruling that somehow the commission didn't need to respond to this directive because the 1990 case was still good law. Essentially, she's asking you to do that now. The effect of the highway and the gaming compact. Well, number one, again, I mentioned that her argument would essentially say the highway gives the commission an opportunity to embargo electricity from the tribes from a location the tribe clearly has authority. That certainly, in my mind, cannot be the outcome. The character of any of the property cannot result in a deprivation of this clearly articulated authority that the tribe has to determine the electric service provider at the location. It's also worth pointing out that the Highway 5 is not the property of the state of North Dakota. Rather, it is land held in trust for the tribe over which there's an easement for roadway purposes. We cited in our written pleadings the Gourneau, I believe is how you say it, Gourneau v. Smith, which ruled that there can be no doubt that state highways within the boundary of the reservation are part of the reservation. That's a quote. With respect to the gaming compact, there are clear articulations within the gaming compact that it affects nothing else, that it expands neither party's authorities. Well, I don't believe she raised it in her written, or pardon me, in her oral argument. There were comments with respect to the limited waiver of sovereign immunity with respect to civil suits in the gaming compact. That has very precisely articulated limited waiver of sovereign immunity, again, a very clearly and distinct issue from sovereignty. The gaming compact just has no relevance to these proceedings. I think the last thing I want to address before concluding is the effect on rates. The commission is aware that Otter Tail serves several jurisdictions. It is not uncommon for public utilities to serve more than one jurisdiction. We use jurisdictional allocators to allocate the costs to those jurisdictions. Doesn't matter if they're big or small. For example, Otter Tail serves a portion of South Dakota less than 10%. Now, that's larger than a single customer or several customers. But at the same time, jurisdictional allocators are used to allocate costs to different jurisdictions. While it's not come up in a prior Otter Tail case, to my recollection, no party has ever raised the question of whether we should use separate jurisdictional allocations for tribal jurisdictional loads. It is certainly conceivable that that would be an approach to allocating the costs of service to those specific jurisdictions. I expect that that may be an issue in Otter Tail's next rate case. And I believe I am perfectly prepared to respond to that issue. I think what I'll conclude with is just turning back to the issues that were noticed for this hearing and walking through what I think is the proper resolution of each of those issues. This was in a notice dated April 25th. There's four issues that were noticed. Number one, whether the Public Service Commission has jurisdiction to award the relief requested by the complaint. Again, the relief requested by the complaint is that a restraining order be issued against Otter Tail forbidding it from providing service to the Skydancer Casino. As I laid out, the Skydancer Casino, it's undisputed, is a tribally owned business on tribal trust land, and that a resolution, by resolution, the tribe has determined that Otter Tail should provide service to that location. The 1995 case is directly on point, that a restraining order of that type would be prohibited, a prohibited infringement on the tribe's authority, and therefore, that question has to be answered, no. The Public Service Commission does not have jurisdiction to issue such a restraining order. Number two, whether the respondent's motion to dismiss should be granted for the same reasons, yes. Number three, whether respondents should be restrained and enjoined from conducting or extending lines, plant, or system to the Skydancer campus without first obtaining a certificate of public convenience and necessity from the commission. Again, that is no, because a restraining order would be in violation of this order and ruling that suggests that the tribe may determine who is to supply electric service without regards to the rate structure or other regulations of North Dakota Public Service Commission. And then finally, number four, whether the respondent should be required to remove its service extension facilities already constructed. And again, the answer is no for the same reasons. With that, I guess I'll make myself available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gerritsen. Mr. Grumman, do you have any questions of Mr. Gerritsen?
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner Clark, please.
Just a couple. Well, as a matter of law, you may be right. May. I'd raise a specter of public policy outcomes, and I think you started getting to that towards the end of your presentation. That's what I want to focus a little bit on. Because I can see some really bad public policy outcomes from a scenario standpoint if you start thinking about any one individual particular customer being able to simply choose what not even energy provider but distribution provider gets to serve it. What tariffs will be applied to Skydancer load if Otter Tail serves? Would it be the currently on file North Dakota tariffs, or would it be some other private contractual agreement that's reached between the tribe and Otter Tail?
The tribe and Otter Tail, in my opinion, are entitled to contract as they see fit. I will say it has been Otter Tail's approach to these that standard rates apply.
So standard rates for ongoing service, line extension policy?
Yes. Terms of service, there is no discriminate treatment of this customer vis-a-vis any others. But at the same time, that is pursuant to contract and tribal regulation to the extent it applies.
Are there steps this commission should be taking on behalf of those ratepayers over whom clearly we do have jurisdiction, which would be all the other ratepayers of Otter Tail, to require Otter Tail to, in some way, at least from an accounting measure, wall off these types of investments? So if in the future the tribe says, we want to go back to North Central, or if there's a Canadian company or an independent power producer, maybe we want MDU to come in and serve, so that other ratepayers are protected and not asked to subsidize a other customer, whoever it may be.
Obviously, that Commissioner Clark, I'm sorry, and other commissioners, that's obviously a great question for a rate case, and I expect we'll visit that question in a rate case. And in fact, I should say we do visit those questions in current rate cases with respect to our other jurisdictions. We do our best to allocate and assign the costs associated with responding to each jurisdiction so that the other jurisdictions are not inappropriately paying the cost of service for others outside this jurisdiction. This is a, you know, a lawyer's dream, of course, that how to allocate costs among several jurisdictions. And so we have spent a lot of time in our rate cases on that state to state. I can say in the last two rate cases in a neighboring jurisdiction, I have spent at least half of each rate case time on the question of how to allocate transmission-related costs among our several jurisdictions. It's been an enjoyable intellectual enterprise from some perspectives, but it's lengthy litigation. With respect to distribution, it's easier. There tends to be assignable costs. But we approach that in each case.
Okay. Does I'm reaching back into memory, and I don't recall if this is a utility issue or something else I dealt with somewhere along the way, but is there anything in the 95 case or other cases that you're aware of that requires the tribe to have adopted a comprehensive regulatory regime in order to exercise its control? This, for some reason, this argument, it sticks in my mind, and I can't remember exactly why that is.
Well, in this case, there is a tribal code that's existed for, I don't know, since 1990s, if I recall correctly. I actually think, you know, as I reviewed those cases, I don't know that given the final outcome of this, which doesn't suggest that for these limited service locations, a comprehensive code is required, because the determination is that by contract or resolution, the tribe can serve. Through the course of these proceedings, though, there's the collateral issue, which is eventually found to be negative, which is, does the tribe have authority over all service locations within its tribe? And I think it's that issue where the question of the tribal code, comprehensive tribal code, is really being litigated. Now, no one ever says, and I hope it's not relevant in this case, or I don't feel it is, that one has to adopt a comprehensive tribal code in order to address these specific service locations, because sort of different issues at stake. So that's my view. But there is this discussion in the 1990 North Dakota Supreme Court case about comprehensive tribal regulation, and there wasn't any in Devil's Lake at the time, and therefore that was one of the rationales upon which the 1990 North Dakota Supreme Court decided that the tribe didn't have authority over, the entire reservation for purposes of providing electric service. So,
sure. To break
I hope
down,
I've answered your question.
Sure. This may go a little bit beyond the bounds of this case, but I'm curious. The court seems to have spoken to tribally owned businesses located within the exterior boundaries of a reservation and on trust land. What would be the so that's sort of one side of the equation. It sounds like other types of businesses on trust land or within the exterior borders of the reservation, what regulatory regime applies to those? What, as opposed to maybe tribal members living within the exterior boundaries, as opposed to tribal members? Can you run the kind of the gamut for me, how the court analyzes those?
Well, it's a narrow exception. I mean, this stated ruling in the 1995 district court case is narrow, and I think it requires each of those factors to be satisfied. I think you've got to have a tribally owned business, you've got to have a tribal trust or Indian owned land. I have to think of the status of that.
Yeah.
Indian owned or trust land. And you've got to have the tribe, you know, deciding that the provider through resolution or contract should be the provider. I think that's what is satisfied in this case. There are some discussions about tribal members. My recollection from the lengthy, circuitous litigation is that there were determinations made that tribal membership alone is not adequate. So if you have a tribal trust land and a tribal member, not a tribal-owned business, I don't recall specifically, but I don't believe it falls within this purview. There is some litigation after this. I believe there's an Eighth Circuit opinion. I don't recall the outcome of that, where there was some question as to tribally sort of governmental services provided by the tribe that might not otherwise fit these definitions. And I have to say I don't recall the outcome of those, and I don't have a response for you on those.
Okay. Thanks. That's all I have.
Thank you. Commissioner Kramer, please.
Thank you. It's hard almost to ask you questions if I'm to conclude that your argument is accurate, that all the questions are answered by what's underlined in that 1995 case, but bear with me for just a little bit. With regard to these jurisdiction allocators, and we're all very familiar, as you know, if you've spent half of your time on these cases determining them, I certainly have, with regard to other jurisdictions and the relevance of costs assumed in their jurisdiction and allocated properly. But none of their jurisdictions are within the footprint of our larger jurisdiction. I mean, that's clearly, in my mind, a distinction. Is it not? Or does the geography not matter?
If I may, Commissioner, there are a few instances where that is not the case. Otter Tail does provide wholesale service to certain towns, for example. Boy, we get into some pretty deep rate making here, but my recollection is that in our jurisdictional allocators, we take into consideration those federal they're served under grandfathered federal agreements approved by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. My recollection, we do an allocator, a set of allocators to address those situations. So I can't – now, that's different because we're providing a wholesale service rather than a retail service. So, I mean, it is somewhat different, but there are, in a sense – towns within the states we serve where jurisdictional allocations occur.
And currently, costs on reservations aren't allocated solely or exclusively to the reservations' ratepayers, right? I mean, you serve areas now on reservation.
Yes, Commissioner. To my knowledge, that all of the prior cases we have, the reservation service has been included in the general cost of service within the states we have provided service. That's been my recollection. It's never come up as an issue. The service to the two loads following the 1995 case, I don't believe it ever came up as an issue as to whether we should carve them out as a specific jurisdictional service in our last general rate case.
That's my recollection as well. This is one of those questions that, you know, I guess wouldn't, again, depending on how we'd conclude this one, but what of those 7 meters, Skydancer, that are being currently, should I be concerned about that? I guess the tribal government and the ratepayers of the reservation maybe, but am I to be concerned about that? And why not, if not?
I don't think you're to be concerned about that. I don't think that those are issues within your jurisdiction. Now, what I would say to that is Otter Tail is certainly aware of the tribe's discretion going forward. Mm-hmm. Otter Tail has, by contract and other things, taken that into consideration, taken the risks of a different tribal determination in the future into consideration. My belief is we have a responsibility to the tribe, and the tribe has a responsibility to us. And it is that relationship that's governed by us and the tribe and because of these rulings, not by this commission.
Well, then, should I be concerned about potential public policy outcomes, as Commissioner Clark has talked about? What's my responsibility and concern relating to public policy outcomes?
Well, we have 7 years of litigation where I think if it's heavy going. That I'm quoting that from Judge Conmee. It's heavy going. But there are, I mean, there, that entire litigation is about public policy, how to deal with indigenous peoples, how to deal with electric service, which is by its nature an integrated service. It's a lengthy narrative, as I said, and complex, but with a very clear outcome that balances public policy issues that, you know, we don't get to touch on very often. You know, tribal sovereignty is a very interesting subject of public policy. But in this case, the U.S. Federal District Court for the District of North Dakota resolved the public policy issue with respect to these particular service locations.
Okay, I'm going to leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Call, please.
Thank you for your comments. Got notes jotted all over here, so if I jump around a little bit. When was Otter Tail first approached by tribal authorities that they might want you to serve their new facility?
I can't answer that question. I would assume it is in very similar time frame to what Ms. Hoffarth said.
Is there someone in Otter Tail that can answer that question?
Yes. One moment, please. About the end of July.
Of 2011, I'd assume?
Yes.
So the why? What prompted the tribal authorities to contact Otter Tail? I mean, they hadn't done it before. What prompted it now?
I'm not sure. That may be a question for the tribe.
Well, I guess, you know, we have – Kevin and Tony have talked a lot about the jurisdictional. I'm getting talking about an investor-owned utilities decision-making process, mm-hmm. which I think at some point does tie into some of this. But the – you know, what if Otter Tail Power would have just said, you know what, no thank you. That's North Central served that area for decades. Was there anything that could have happened to Otter Tail by just saying no thank you?
We could – one has to consider – if I may, my assumption is that the question is, would it be better if we all agreed not to compete for a load? In a sense, voluntarily adopted the North Dakota regime as we approach these tribal loads.
But does that decision say you have to serve a tribal area fast, or it just says you can? It doesn't say you have to. Am I read of it?
I would have a hard time refusing service to a customer that has a right to choose our company as a service provider, unless there was an overwhelming need to do so. So the answer I think that I'd like to give is I don't think we were in a position where we would refuse service to a customer that was legitimately asking for it, and in my opinion, this customer was legitimately asking whether we could provide service.
Fair enough. So has Otter Tail been tracking all the costs associated with this since the beginning for a future rate case? Let's say, have you been tracking all these costs somehow on your own, or who's paying for all these costs now, the costs incurred up to this point?
Commissioner Kalk, our rates haven't changed, so our rate structure hasn't changed. These costs would be considered in a future rate case to the extent they are in a test year or in rate base in that future case. All of the investment that the company has made in terms of capitalized investment is tracked, absolutely.
Fair enough. Just making sure I'm asking these questions because this, yeah. You said it will come up again, I'm sure. So walk me through another scenario. What if leadership at the tribal authorities next week says we changed our mind? Then what do we do? How do you move forward then as a company? Because do you have a contract that says you're to serve them for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
We have a contract of duration. I may recollection is a 10-year contract.
So that's already been signed and already been executed?
Yes.
So you're covered, if you will, for the 10-year period of time?
Yes.
Okay. So back to the public policy, what if the tribal authorities asked you to build a wind farm on tribal grounds? You build wind farms, you could sell the power. Would that be the next scope of something? I mean,
Mr. Kalk, we certainly wouldn't. I mean, if there is a generating project that has an economic benefit to our customers, we would consider it.
I guess my point is that the Otter Tail felt it wasn't necessary to come ask for a PCNN to build this line. So would you feel the same way that if all of a sudden we found out Otter Tail is building a wind farm on tribal land?
Commissioner Kalk, I understand your question now. So does the commission have siting authority, for example, on...
I don't believe we have siting authority on tribal land, but that's what I'm saying is that the... I'm taking this to the next evolution of where Otter Tail could all of a sudden just say you're going to build a wind farm on tribal land based on extension of this.
I haven't considered whether one could extend this ruling to apply to the siting of generation, and I'm not sure if I'm answering your question or not. But right now I would say that I'm not.
I guess the question is, at what point would Otter Tail ever come in front of this commission to ask to do something on tribal lands ahead of time? If is it never, or is it we would look at each case?
Commissioner Kalk, I think depending upon the activity that we're contemplating, we'd have to consider what the law is with respect to that activity. And so I believe we'd have to consider that in each case.
So do you say the 95 decision is just tied into distribution services or all types of services?
I believe it
not is. The 95 law, the 95 ruling.
I believe it ties into the provision of electric service on those in those particular instances. All of the service we provide is a comprehensive service that involves generation, transmission, and distribution.
That was my point about the wind farm, though. Could that be extended to you have the right to build a wind farm on tribal land?
I have to ask for a clarification, Commissioner Kalk. Do you mean build a wind farm with the idea of using it in our integrated resource?
I don't know. I guess
for the provision.
I'm giving a lot of what-if questions here to where as we move forward, does Otter Tail believe that anything they do on tribal land is not required to come to the Public Service Commission ahead of time?
I'm not making that argument today. The argument I'm making is that we don't need a public a certificate of public convenience and necessity to serve a customer there in this particular context.
I guess the last one I'll have, because it's like we're off the scope of what we're talking about today, but the who at Otter Tail made the final decision to extend these services? I mean, I know Denny very well. Was it Denny able to make that decision? Did it go all the way to leadership in Fergus Falls? Because it seems like this is a pretty significant decision to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess management is aware of it. Whether I can identify an individual, I couldn't say, but I certainly know that Mark Helen is a vice president who would have been aware of this. And if you're asking who authorized us to enter into a contract?
Yeah. I guess that'd be
I'm fair. Guessing that Mark would have been involved.
Okay. I think that's all I have for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Clark.
I do have one follow-up. I'm curious about your response to Commissioner Kalk's question regarding Otter Tail cannot say no to a customer legitimately requesting service, which I would agree under North Dakota law that's the case. But as I understand Otter Tail's position, it's that North Dakota law doesn't apply to this particular circumstance. So under what law in this particular case Otter Tail required to provide service to a legitimately requesting customer?
I was Commissioner Clark. I wasn't saying, and I have to read the record back. I didn't mean to imply that it was under North Dakota law sort of obligation to serve that I was saying we would not be in a position to refuse. I think that just principles of non-discrimination and general commercial practice would suggest that if the tribe is entitled
but
to...
But aren't principles of discrimination as they apply to utility companies? I mean, it is through state law that those are burdens upon the company.
Not exclusively, Commissioner Clark. Obviously, those are, especially within our jurisdictions, and I'm using the term not in the narrow sense of monopoly service, and again, I'm just using the term more as a general term of art, where I would say that I would be, I'm not saying we couldn't legally, I'm not saying that the tribe could require us by law to do so, I'm saying that in this context, I would have a discomfort about any policy that would suggest we would refuse service to a legitimately requesting authority in this circumstance.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't know if there's any better way for me to clarify my statement. I would be happy to do so.
I'm not sure that there is. I will leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioners. We have another presentation by the intervener, and then we have rebuttal. But I think it might be a good idea to take a 5-10 minute recess right here. So let's go off the record, but let's discuss briefly off the record. Do you want to continue and finish this before
let's
we
press
in?
Through? I think.
Okay.
I'd rather than worry.
Yeah, I don't know how long the intervener's presentation is going to be, but
I'm
guessing it's been pretty
right,
well.
That's what made. I'm guessing too. So. Let's just take a short recess here, about 5-10 minutes, and we'll come back and finish.
I have to admit, when he used non-discrimination, I wrote it down right away. That was the one thing that I think for now.